Okay, so it's recording now. So today is Saturday, May 26th, and this is Leonel Perez with the Race and Oral History course at UCSD in spring of 2018, and I am interviewing Abdul, and we are at the Biomedical Center. We're in the media room, and we will start our interview. It's 4:32 p.m., and we will start with this conversation. So Abdul, could you please tell me your name, and can you state it or spell it?
My name is Abdul Kadir Adawi, Abdulkadir, last name Adawe.
And where and when were you born?
When?
Yeah, when?
I was born on January 1st, 1987, in Somalia, Mogadishu.
Could you spell that? The not Somalia, but the place.
Mogadishu, Mogadisho, I think. I'm not sure.
So yeah, may you describe your hometown for me?
It was the capital city of Somalia. It was a nice place. We had like it was like San Diego. We had a nice beach. We was living and it was right on the beach, so.
And can you describe for me your childhood home or your neighborhood?
Neighborhood I grew up, it was like everybody knew each other, very friendly, and it was a beautiful place.
Beautiful place.
It was beautiful.
Yeah, so can you tell me a little bit like about your like favorite childhood memories?
It was playing on the sand, going to school, going to Duxie. Actually, it was in school. We was learning their Arabic language, so that's all I remember. Going to the beach, it was like right, like probably like 2 blocks from my house.
Yeah, could you, wait, what was the school again?
It's called Duxie.
Duxie. Could you spell it, or?
I can't spell it, Duxie.
Okay, no, it's fine. And that, what grade was that? Like, was that, is it like
It doesn't
sixth
have a
grade?
grade, so you'll find from small children to grown-ups. So everybody goes there, It depends on what chapter are you in. So nobody sits on chairs, so everybody sits on the ground. We form like a big circle. So it don't matter what age you are. It can be like a small kid can be smarter than you, but at the same time, nobody discriminate,
No one discriminates.
So yeah, everybody was there to learn.
Wow, that's really interesting.
No grade levels, so yeah.
So that there's a difference between the US
Yeah,
and like
very
Somalia.
different. Yeah, because here there's grade level. Over there, we had no grade level. Everybody was going there, from starting from 5-year-olds to 20-year-olds. So everybody was, there to learn.
So was that like so basically was that kind of like the primary education? Like
Yep.
the
Yeah.
And then after that you had what? When was after that?
After that, you go to school, Basically, once you complete the Quran, then basically we learn the Quran on those duxies. So once you finish the duxie, then you start going to school.
And that's like equivalent to like university maybe here or?
No, it depends. Like duxies, they only teach one one book, you know, the Bible, or the Quran, you know. That's their main focus in that. And it was thought, we didn't use books. We used cut out words. That's as long as it's, you know, as tall as you. Probably sometimes when you're a kid, sometimes you have it longer than you, you know. So it's, you can say from here to like same size as a human being, shaped like a human. Yeah, then we write it and then wash it off at the end of the day.
Yeah. Oh, well, so that's kind of like your
utensils? That's our tools to learn.
Tools to learn?
Yeah.
Was that made out of like a special material?
Cut out wood.
Okay.
That can be washed off. The end can be washed off and then can be.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it has its own. Can you talk to me a little bit about currently now in the U.S. like talk about like your family, like how many siblings
I'm the oldest of four.
You're the oldest of four.
Of four, yeah. I got one brother and two sisters. We're 1 year apart, my brother and my brother's 30 and I'm 31, and then I got a little sister who's 15 years old, and a older sister who's 23 years old. Was raised by my mom. We was raised by our mom. So yeah.
Yeah. And now, when did you move into the U.S.?
I came to the United States when I was 13, 2000. And I've been living here ever since 18 years. I haven't went back home yet.
Okay.
Yeah, so I've been living in the U.S. ever since.
Yeah.
Ever since 2000.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And is that one of your goals, to go back and visit?
Dream.
Is it your dream?
Yeah, to go see my family back home that I haven't seen over 18 years.
Mm-hmm. And following up that question was, are you still in contact with your family in your home country?
Yeah, we talk to them every other week.
Okay.
My mom calls them, you know, to just check out how they're doing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we talk to them.
You
talk to my uncles and my grandma. Mm.
Can you talk about your community here in the U.S. or, like, your experiences here in the U.S. in terms of, like, your communities that you've been...
To be honest, I haven't been involved with the community that often, you know. Recently I've started being involved in the East African community in Mid-City.
Mm-hmm.
I've done like some community services, you know, helped out.
Yeah.
But now I'm you know, keeping contact with the community, trying to be part of the community.
Could you talk a little bit about the things that you have done in terms of like traveling within the U.S.?
After high school, I went to 1 year of community college in Mesa College,
mm-hmm.
and I've decided to go check out the America. I wanted to go see America, actually. So I have traveled and worked in very different factories or, you know, different jobs. I have lived in Seattle, Washington. I've lived in Amarillo, Texas. I've lived in Dodge, Kansas City. I have lived in Marshall, Minnesota. Marshall, Minnesota. Minneapolis, Minnesota, St. Cloud, Minnesota. So I've been all over America except the East Coast. That's one place that, you know, I haven't checked off yet.
Yeah.
And Miami.
Miami.
But it feels like this. I'm in Miami right now. San Diego is like Miami.
So one day you'll be Do you have specific cities besides Miami and the East Coast that you
wanna? New York is my main, you know, and Washington D.C. That's, yeah, to go see the White House.
See the White House.
Yeah, check, you know, that's one of my, it's in my bucket list. That's what it's called, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, New York, and Washington D.C.
Yeah, and can you tell me a little bit, like how did that want of like experiencing different cities, like where did that come from, you know?
Actually, because I started traveling because of, you know, because the friends that I was around with wanted, you know, to start looking for a better opportunity besides, you know, California. California was, you know, it was, I think the recession hit California. Mm-hmm. When the recession hit, we all decided to get out because we couldn't afford to pay for our rent. Yeah. So me and close family members and close friends from high school decided to travel and see, you know, see where else we can find a better opportunity besides here. So that's the reason why we started traveling, to get a better opportunity and to find somewhere that we can make a better living.
And then, so you mentioned family members. Is there a specific person in your family?
Yeah, I grew up with two of my uncle's sons that we were in the same age. Mm-hmm. So we decided to move to Seattle. That's the first place that we, because we couldn't keep up with the rent in San Diego. It was like too much. Mm-hmm. So we went to Seattle, and then the apartments was cheaper. But there was like, I think like 500 for two bedroom. Mm-hmm. And then instead of here, we was paying $1,200 for two bedroom. So that's the reason why, you know, we left California, because the life over here was way expensive, and then out there was much cheaper.
So I hear you saying that this wasn't like an individual.
Yeah, it wasn't. It was an individual. It was like me and my two of my buddies, two of my close cousins actually,
yeah,
and roommates from after high school that we became roommates.
Mm-hmm. And then after that, after you went traveling to different cities throughout the U.S., like, did you move along with them or did you separate?
We separated after Seattle because we. They stayed, and I've came back to San Diego, because I wanted to, because my younger brother was living here, and he needed my, you know, my guidance. So I came back. I left them, and then I came back here, and then I moved to Texas, where I brought my little brother with me, for him too, so he can have a better opportunity. But he's a lazy guy, so he didn't want to work when I brought him out there, so I had to bring him back. So that's the reason why I came back. But I met him in Minnesota, where we reunited again.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where you met your two friends?
Yeah.
In Minnesota,
where we reunited, and one of them now is married and got two kids. So he's doing very good for himself. The other one lives in a small town, somewhere, a small town in Minnesota.
Okay. And you mentioned, do you want to kind of go back to Minnesota that you mentioned?
Yeah, I want to go back to Minnesota because most of our family moved over there because there is much better opportunity for our community, you know, our people, like, you know, when the Civil War happened, that Minnesota became a base for the Somali immigrants. Mm-hmm. That's where most of the Somalians are located, and that's where most of my family members live today. And we're the only people, only three family left in California.
Oh, so actually you have more family in Minnesota than
here,
San Diego.
Okay.
Yeah. And you mentioned Minnesota is like the biggest.
The, Somali immigrants.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So it's not San Diego.
It's not San Diego. Minnesota is number one, I think. Seattle is number two, and then Ohio is number three. Everybody left, because San Diego used to be, you know, used to be like number three or two, but everybody moved, because ever since the 2010 recession happened, yeah, everybody started leaving California.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And then, okay. Yeah, that sounds interesting. So could you talk a little bit about, like, your educational experience? So, like, what schools did you attend here in the U.S.?
When I first came to America, I only know the basic, like the ABC, and then what is it called? If you point something out, you know, I can say, like, I will say, the only thing that I will start in like for a year, I think, though I had a like English teacher before we came to America for like, I think, a year or less than that. But the only thing we would start was just the ABC, and then he would teach us, so what is this, like, you know, we would say table, wall, you know, door. So I knew all the everything, you know, that was around me when I came to America. And they threw me in seventh grade. So that's when that's where I started my first, you know, real school. And then it was in Orange County. That's where we first landed. Mm-hmm. And then we came to San Diego. Yeah. And then that's where I started my eighth grade year at Wilson Middle School in East Diego. In the beginning it was rough, you know, getting used to the, keeping up with the advanced kids that was, you know, being taught from kindergarten all the way, you know, to eighth grade. And I had to, you know, keep up with the advanced students for me to move ahead. But I've done very well. And then I graduated from eighth grade, and my mom couldn't believe it, because she said, "He just came to America yesterday. How can you be graduating?" You know?
Yeah.
So it was a big shock to my family. And then I went to high school, and then I went to Hoover High School. I did good, and I graduated with my class, and then I wasn't held back, so, you know, I was very fast learner. I went to one semester of college. I could have, you know, if I would have, you know, sticked around, and, you know, I would have graduated by now, but, you know, I just decided school wasn't for me, and I wanted to make money. I was into that, what is it called, the nice cars, and I wanted the money, I guess, you know,
yeah,
to be a man, to take care of myself, actually, you know, to make a living for myself.
Mm-hmm. Wait, so can you talk a little bit about, like, going back to your so you didn't go to elementary school here?
No.
You went straight to middle school.
I started at seventh, and then,
okay,
and then I went to, like, not a fourth, because I came at, when does the school close? I think for middle school, June.
Yeah.
Like, so I came May, and, you know, May of 2000. So I went to seventh grade for one month or 2 months.
Yeah, like 1 month.
1 month, and then the school closed. Yeah, I came at May 16, 2000. So I went to seventh grade, and then from seventh grade, I think the school got closed a month later, and then we moved here to San Diego, where I started eighth grade.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you started eighth grade at Hoover High School?
No, eighth grade at Wilson Middle School.
Oh, okay.
Wilson Middle School, that's where I graduated. That's where my family was shocked, and they even called back home, and they said, "Oh, you know, he graduated. I don't know what he graduated with, but he's graduating this week," you know. It was a big shock to my family. They couldn't believe it, you know.
Yeah, I see. So wait, can you talk a little bit about why did your family move from Orange
to here?
San Diego? Yeah.
The reason why we moved from Orange County is because we, because my mom didn't speak English, and then she didn't, nobody was helping us, you know, with the groceries or, you know, taking us to a, like, doctor's appointment, because my mom's brothers and her sisters was living here in Linda Vista, close area. So as soon as we finished, you know, the school year, when the school year, and when the school got closed, my mom decided that, you know, she couldn't, you know, she couldn't make a living in Orange County because she was not getting any kind of, you know, community. There wasn't a community that was helping people at that time. So most of our family members was living here. So she decided it was better for her to get close to her brothers and her sisters, so where she can get help, you know, yeah. So she can move around, and so that's the reason why we came over here.
Yeah. So it's a lack of, like, language.
Yeah. Lack. Yeah. Resources, and, you know, and people that she can talk to, I guess, you know. Yeah.
So there wasn't a big community.
Yeah, no. There was only one family that was helping us out at the in Orange County, and, you know, my mom didn't want to, you know, ask, you know, too much, you know, so she decided to come close to her brothers and her sisters that was living here in San Diego.
Okay. So could you tell me a little bit about how was it navigating the U.S. like educational system for you? Like, I remember other times that we spoke was like soccer was a big thing for you, and, you know, like friends and stuff. And anything.
When I first came, it was a big culture shock, because, you know, I've never, you know, seen anybody with, you know, everybody was one skin color, you know. The first school I went to was a big shock for me, because I was the only colored person at that school, you know, my seventh grade when I first landed in America. And it was a big culture shock. I was like, because most of the only thing I was, you know, sport was my, you know, my main thing, because back home we played soccer, you know. Actually, we call it football. But when I came to America, it was called a different thing. It was called soccer, and then soccer was a big thing. And then another big shock was that, you know, that all Americans spoke English, and then I found out that, you know, half of the people didn't speak English, and that was a big shock to me. And I'm like, oh, how come they don't speak their own language? You know, that was my main concern. I'm like, okay, they're the same color, you know, they're the same people, but they don't speak the same language, you know. It was a big culture shock to see, you know, how many, you know, different
ethnicity.
Yeah.
Okay, so wait, could you talk a little bit about that? Like, you mentioned you were the only person of color.
Yeah.
There. So,
It was scary in the beginning. The whole school, I was the only colored person at my school, and the Hispanic community was, like, you know, the closest people that felt like a family to me, because they were the jokers, you know. They wanted to be, like, you know, they welcomed me with open hands, you know. Every time we played football, you know, they picked it. They say, "Oh, you know, we want come play," because, you know, they knew that, you know, I wasn't from this country, or, you know, they haven't seen anybody like me, you know, that plays the sport that they love. So I surrounded myself around them, yeah. And then I felt like, you know, they were like more family to me than, you know, from there. And then we was going to the same ESL class, so we was all learning English together. it became like, you know, okay, so me and you are the same. You guys are not from here too, you know. So we became very close to them, and then I felt like, you know, they made me feel comfortable to be around them.
Yeah. So could you talk a little bit about, like, the ethnicity makeup like of the school, like was it like majority Hispanic, white or Asian or like any of?
To be honest with you, I couldn't tell. I couldn't tell the difference, you know. At that time, everybody looked the same to me, you know. Where I came from, everybody, you know, it was just all Africans. When I came here, it was like, you know, to me, everybody was white, you know. I couldn't tell the difference, you know. The only people I could tell is like, you know, the Asians. Oh, they're different, but, you know, from Hispanic and the whites, I couldn't tell the difference at that. Growing up, you know, at the first one I came, they all looked the same. And then the shocking part was that, you know, how come, you know, they all look the same, but how come they don't speak, you know, the English language, you know? So yeah, I couldn't tell the difference at that point. Mm-hmm. It took me a while, you know, to see the difference, you know. Mm-hmm. So yeah. In the beginning, everybody was like, oh, everybody, yeah, all look the same. You know, as they say, you know, but especially as a 13-year-old, you know, that came from a country, I've never seen anybody that was, you know, that was different color than me. Yeah. We might see it once in a blue moon in a car back home, but, you know, or during the war, when America was, we've seen, you know, probably on TV. That was it, but in real life, you know, I never had that close.
Yeah, that interaction.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And can you talk a little bit about, like, football and, like, the meaning for you?
Yeah. Football was everything when I came to America, because back home, that was the only thing we did, you know? And we didn't have the real ball back home. We made our own. On from you know, balloon, and then, you know, so like, you know, what is it called, like cut out a t-shirt, and then, you know, we made our own. And then we used to compete, you know. So I had my own team, you know, from our own family members growing up in Kenya, refugee camp. So I was like I was the goalie of my team, you know. And then all I had was like my little brothers, you know, that played. It was a competition, you know. We played different countries, like, you know, there was like, because the country that we was in was not Somalia, it was Kenyan. And you know, when you see Kenyans are, you know, very strong Africans. And then when we played them, it was like, you know, it was a very competition, you know. So when I came over here, that's the only thing I had, you know. That was that made me, you know, that made me a star when I came over here. But I became a star in my school, like, you know, because I was so good at it, and they were shocked that, you know, that I was so good at.
You were good at soccer.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, can you talk a little bit about that? You mentioned you were in a refugee camp in Kenya.
Yeah.
And soccer was a big thing.
Yeah, that's the only thing we had. Mm. You're playing in dirt, you know, with no shoes. Mm. Growing up, yeah. It was rough. Yeah.
And how was it, like, the interaction between you and like other people? I don't know, with other people from like other countries. Like, how was that? Like,
The Kenyans are very, very mean people. In the beginning, because we was invading their country, I guess, because we came, like, you know, the whole Somalia came to Kenya, because everybody was fleeing the war, so they were shocked that, you know, all these people was coming over to their country, taking over their country. So they weren't at the beginning nice people. I don't know till this day, but, you know, I even one time, because when the police come, you know, the police will walk through the neighborhood, and they will start picking people up, you know, and where's your paperwork? If you don't have your paperwork, you gotta pay the money or you go to jail, you know. So as a young kid, so when I see the police coming, I used to warn the whole community, run through, you know, the neighborhood, say, oh, they're coming, you know, hide. Everybody takes off. Because either you gotta pay money or, you know, you go to jail. So that's, you don't have paper, yeah, pay me, You know, oh, we take you to your house so you can get money and so you can pay us. So one time I used to do that a lot, and then they, you know, every time they come to the neighborhood, we run through. Oh, they come in, you know, tell everybody that's around the neighborhood. Oh, get into your houses, you know, lock your doors. The police, you know, the police are coming, you know. So everybody takes off, and then one time I got caught, you know. So every time I did that, you know. So you know, there was one that came from where I used to run and warn people. There was a cop that was coming, and then I seen them coming from, you know, from this side. So I ran towards that, and then I got caught, and I got slapped, like, you know. His slap was so hard, all five fingers of his was, like, you know, tatted on my face. After ever since then, I quit. I go, like, nope, I'm not going to warn nobody.
So they set you up?
They set me up because I was, you know, I was being the lookout for the neighborhood. We was the lookout, all the little kids was the lookout, you know. We would play outside to soccer, and then when they see us, they're like, oh, we warn our people, oh, they're coming, because we're the only people that they were, you know, they were targeting. We was the target. So we was, you know, we was being lookout. Oh, Abdul, you gonna let us know, you know. Like in the afternoon, around like 4 or 5 o'clock, everybody comes out, you know, when the sun is going down, people are just, you know, are just talking, you know, the whole neighborhood is out. That's when they come around and, you know, ask, oh, where's your papers? And then, oh, you got to pay them, you know. Yeah. If you don't have papers, you got to pay them cash at that spot, or they won't let you go, or you go to jail. Yeah.
And how did that start? Like, you being the neighborhood lookout person?
Because I've learned, what is it called? That was the leader of all the kids that was going to the Duxie. I was like a TA for the teacher.
You were a TA?
Yeah, TA for a teacher. So, because I learned back home, my dad was a teacher, the Quran. So when we came to the refugee camp, I was ahead of everybody else. So the teacher was like, oh, the teacher, you know, made me a TA. Like when he goes to breakfast, I will take over, you know, the two classes. It would be cut in the middle, like a woman class and then a guy class. They don't interact with each other. There's like a curtain in the middle, and the teacher sits in the right, you know, by the curtain. So when the teacher goes to breakfast, I'll take over, you know, I'll be the teacher. So I was known in the whole neighborhood, you know. I was just a small boy, but you know, I was teaching the grown-ups, you know, because I was way ahead of there. Yeah. So that's why I was like the little kid that you know that controlled. That was the, you know, all the kids, you know, because I was their teacher also, you know. So yeah.
So you were kind of like a leader in the community.
Yeah, in the community.
And could you talk about, like, how did it look like visually, the refugee camp? Like, was it, like, you know, how could you describe that?
The refugee camp was the refugee, at that moment, the school was not in the refugee camp. We left the refugee camp at that moment. We came to the capital of Kenya, Nairobi. The refugee camp, I think it was called Suftu. I think, yeah, that's where my sister was born. But it was just a hut that we built with our own hands. Like something, you know, we got tents from the UN. Some people lived in tents. Some people they made their own huts. Yeah, where you go get some trees and you just build them, and then like a cow shit to keep it stable, I guess. And I even built my own bathroom where I dig the hole. Me and my brother dig the hole, and then, you know, that was our bathroom for the family that we built, I guess.
Yeah. So you were doing a lot of hands-on work.
Yeah, because I was the oldest for our family, so I was that person that, you know, that that mom always called on him, like, you know.
Kind of have been a leader in your family
since I was a little kid.
So, yeah, thank you for that. I think, for the song. So, what does education mean to you? This is more broadly speaking. Like, you could define education however you want. Like, what does it mean to you?
Education, to be honest with you, is the key to life, I guess. You can call that. If you have education, you have more varieties of things that you can do. Based, if you have education, you can make a life for you and for your family, mm-hmm. not just for yourself, but you can help out a lot of people with education. Like, it depends on what kind of education you get, If you get good education, you can make money, and then you can help out by with your education or with the money that the education provide for you. So education, like, it plays a big part in today's life, in today's society. Mm-hmm. Without education, you're just another, I guess you can say, another... without education is like, it's like you don't have knowledge without education, and you will always work a dead end jobs, I guess. Mm-hmm. Okay. You will never have something stable without education.
Mm-hmm. Could you talk about like for you, mm-hmm. like the difference between education from Somalia and from the US?
Mm-hmm. In Somalia, to be honest with you, I've never reached education, where I've learned the ABC. I've never learned the ABC of Somalia. The only thing I've learned was the Arabic ABC. Mm-hmm. And then I was my family goal was for me to be a teacher, the Arabic teacher. So that's why because my dad was like the teacher. So I came from a family of teaching. Teaching, yeah. My dad's dad was a teacher. My dad was a teacher. So I was that person that was gonna take the torch and then, be the teacher. And I was, at a young age, I was very, very ahead of all my classmates or all the kids that was the same age as me. And when I came to America, I even helped I was like a TA for my dad, teaching the Quran or the Bible. So I always been a TA, So my family dream was for me to be that, to be the person that teaches the Quran or the Bible, but when I came to America, that took a different turn, because I started learning the ABC and the American language, that everything that I've learned back home got erased. And in 2010, actually, I went back to learning what I've learned back home, and I didn't have no teacher, so my teacher was the computer, actually. Mm-hmm. So I have learned everything that I was taught back home, and I've relearned it because I haven't touched or I haven't opened the Bible, the Quran, mm-hmm. for 10 years. And then when I went back to try to see if I can read it, I couldn't pass. Like, because there's like chapters, and then I've learned that 77 chapters when I was 13. I memorized 77 chapters off the top of my head, but in the 10 years period, I forgot the 77 chapters I've learned. So when I went back to reading, I couldn't read the fourth chapter. I stopped at fourth chapter. So I have to relearned it, And now I'm, you can say I have know all the 77 chapters. So I'm proud of myself for, you know, for teaching, for relearning it.
So now you know the 77 chapters?
Yeah.
And do you have your own physical Quran?
Like, yeah.
You do have
yeah.
Okay.
I got a little one that I read, because you constantly you have to, you know, the brain is like, you know, if you don't practice it, it will erase. And so here, like every week, like, you know, I try to read like probably like 10 chapters every day. So I go down, and then once I finish it, and I start back up again, so that I won't make the same mistake that I've made 10 years ago and then, you know, completely forget about it.
Yeah. Okay. Wow, that's really interesting. So talk to me about that. Like, what are your interests, you know, in the Quran? Or, like, is there, like, a particular topic that you're mostly...
To be honest with you, I was taught, you know, they only taught me how to read it, but I don't know the meaning, you know. I can read it, and, you know, I can read it in Arabic. But I couldn't, if you tell me, oh, what does it mean? I cannot tell you what does it mean, but I know how to read it. So basically the only, because I've never, once you finish it, that's, and then you start it over, and then they'll teach you the meaning. So that's how it works. First you have to learn it the Arabic way, and then they will start it over, and then you learn the meaning. You see? So I've never read, because there's, I think, 114 chapters in the Quran, and then so I've learned 77, so I had like a little bit left. 114 minus 77 is what?
Like halfway.
Yeah.
So you still have like another half.
Half left. Mm.
Yeah. And that's what you're gonna be planning on doing. Is that a next step for you?
That was, but you know, here I can't do it. Yeah, I only have 37 left.
Okay.
So
I thought it was 141
in a way. No, one. Yeah, I had 37 left. So once if I would have completed the 37, then I would have learned the meaning, you know, and then it would have been easy for me to, you know, to pick up the meaning, because I already know the, you know, what it's saying in Arabic. So I never got the chance to learn the meaning of the 77, so now it's like, you know, my goal was to go to Egypt, and then, you know, and learn, because you can do it in 6 months. You know, there are schools that, you know, you finish it in 6 months. That was my main goal, to do it, and then, you know, to go to Egypt for like 6 months, and then, you know, I have close friends that have done it. You know,
they have gone to Egypt,
and they go learn it, and then they come back and they become the teacher. You know, help the community, like become a teacher at mosques. You know, reteach. Mm.
Okay. So the first step for you is finishing reading, and then
learning the meaning.
Learning the meaning.
Yeah.
And then after that, you get certified as a teacher.
Teacher.
Okay, I see. So then that's one of your goals.
Yeah.
To go to Egypt.
Yeah. You know, my main goal is to go see back home, and then go to Egypt. I want to go see my, you know, my uncles and my grandma in Ethiopia. Ethiopia.
Yeah. Wait, so your family in Somalia and Ethiopia?
Yeah. Because when the war happened, my uncles and my grandma, we all fled to Ethiopia. Mm-hmm. We fled to Kenya, and then from Kenya. And then my family went to Ethiopia, because Kenya was rough because of the police, and their police system is so corrupted. So Ethiopia is like, you know, it's like a safe zone. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's like they won't check up on you. Where's your paper? They don't do that. You know, it's like, so they felt like, you know, oh, this is like more family than this. You know, so. And then Ethiopians and Somalians and Ethiopia are like, you know, they're like one people, you know, they're the same people. Mm. Like, you can't tell the difference.
Okay.
So yeah, most of my family members are in Ethiopia.
Ethiopia.
Because my mom was born in Ethiopia. My grandma was born in Ethiopia, so there, the Somali, so there's like a land that Ethiopia took from Somalia, where we was in that land. So my mom was born in Ethiopia, but went to Somalia after she got married to my dad.
Okay. So then, what about the language? Is there like a difference, or like what is?
There is difference, but my mom speaks it. I understand it, but you know, I understand what, you know, when a person is talking to me. Ethiopia have like 77 different languages. Isn't that, you know, every tribe speaks their own language. So the biggest tribe is called Oromo. So my family speaks that.
Wait, what is it called?
Oromo.
Oromo?
Yeah.
How do you spell it?
O-R-O. M-A? O-R-O-M-O, I think, yeah. So my mom speaks, she speaks that, my grandma speaks that. I understand it, but, you know, I will say a few words because I forgot, because I've been in the U.S. When I came to the United States, I was fluent in Oromo and in Amharic, but I was speaking Somali barely, but when I came to the United States, all my family members were speaking Somali. They didn't speak the Amharic language or the Oromo language. So I forgot those two languages. Oromo, I understand it, because my mom always speaks it to the back home. So I understand it, but you know, I can't, you know, I do little replies, you know. Nobody can talk about me while I'm, you know, sitting there. I'll catch a person and be like, hey, I know you're talking about me, you know? So you can't say anything.
So they can't gossip.
Yeah, around you, that's right.
Yeah, okay. So can you talk a little bit about the different, you were born in Somalia, you've been to Ethiopia and Kenya?
Yeah, after when the war happened, we was in a refugee camp in Kenya. And then we left the refugee camp and we went back to Somalia. And then from Somalia, we went to Ethiopia. The wars that kept on happening, you know, more tribes started fighting, you know. So we fled. Coming back, like, you know, we was ambushed because people was being killed just because of their skin color. Oh, you look like that tribe, you know. Why are you so light-skinned that you look like that tribe and they just shoot you, you know? So it was like, oh, it don't matter, you know, what, you know, the language you speak, you know? It's like, oh, your blood looks like that tribe, you know? That was the main thing, that was people, they were, you know? And it wasn't safe, so our family decided to leave Somalia and then we went to Ethiopia. Where my mom was born, actually. So we lived in Ethiopia, I think, for a while. That's where I learned the Amharic language, because, you know, because I was around, you know, a lot of people, family members that speak that language. So we learned. I picked up Amharic. I was fluent when I came to America. My whole family only spoke. My brothers and my sister, we all spoke Amharic, but now we all forgot, you know. If you say hi to us, it's like, we don't know how to, you know. But when we came here, we was fluent. Yeah, fluent.
So then you were in Ethiopia, and then from Ethiopia is...
Kenya. We went back to Kenya.
You went back to Kenya. So yeah. It was Somalia, Kenya...
Somalia, Kenya... Somalia, Ethiopia, Kenya. And then we had a refugee camp in Kenya. That's where we came to the capital where we got to come to America. A certificate to come to U.S.
So like a permission.
Permission, yeah.
To come. And could you talk a little bit about kind of like before you, like when you knew you were going to come to the U.S., can you talk a little bit about that? Like you were like, what were your first thoughts? Like you're going to?
To be honest with you, I didn't, you know, what I would, because all our life we traveled by cars, you know. We never took an airplane. But when they said, oh, we're going to America, that America was, you know, it was just another place that we were just going to travel with a car, you know. But, and then the day that we was leaving, I seen all, because we didn't know that much about America, but we was already happy where we was at, you know, we made a lot of friends, you know. It didn't hit us. We went through the process, you know. It didn't hit me that we was, you know, oh, we're not going nowhere far, you know, it's America. We're just going to come visit type, you know. That was my main concern, you know. But when the day that we was leaving, everybody, all our friends and, you know, all family members that was there started crying, you know. And then that's when it hit me. I'm like, oh, definitely, we're going somewhere that we, you know, we're not going to see anybody, you know. Everybody, that's the reason why they're crying. I don't think we're going to see them ever again. And then when we came to the airport, that's when it hit me, you know. America was not somewhere close, you know. And then the whole airplane ride, I think, was like for 2 days, something like that, a night and a day and a night. So it was very far. It was very shocking to, you know, to come and see the airport, and then, you know, see the roads, you know. When we hit New York, I think we landed in New York. My family, you know, we always been, you know, we never had technology this advanced. Like, we never seen technology this advanced. Oh, we went through the air, you know, we touched the sky, we reached the sky, and then the shocking part was, like, you know, the thing that moves, what is it called? The elevator, the escalator, yeah. So we came down from New York, we come down on the escalator on New York, and then, you know, the thing was moving. My mom was like, you know, she sat down we got on the escalator, and then she thought we was gonna walk, but the thing started moving. So she sat down, and she's like, I got a headache, you know? I'm feeling dizzy, so they had to turn the whole escalator off so she can come down. So it was very advanced, you know, technology-wise, you know, road-wise, car-wise, you know. It was very, 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 very nice to see that what human being accomplished.
Yeah. And can you talk about, how did you feel at that moment when you saw people crying?
Mm-hmm.
Is there feelings that came up for you with that?
To be honest with you, I was sad because, you know, I didn't want to leave, you know. What I had was so special because we had very close friends, you know. Because all our life, you know, we moved around, you know. Something happened, you know. Where we used to that, you know, oh, we're going to come back again, you know. But now that I knew when they start crying, I knew that, you know, forget about, you know, them crying. I was, you know, worried about the family that I left in Ethiopia. That I'm like, oh, if they're crying, what about, you know, the other people, the Ethiopia, and my grandma, and my uncles? So that means I'm not going to see them again, you know. It was very, I've cried, to be honest with you, when I see, you know, close family members crying, I cried. You know, said, oh, yeah, we're not coming back ever again. I guess we're never going to be here. So it was a very sad day, the day that we was leaving.
Yeah.
A lot of tears.
A lot of tears, yeah. So now you're here, what, 18 years later? And, you have grown a little?
A lot. I've grown a lot.
Yeah.
I was just a baby when I came here.
You were a baby. Wait, how old were you?
13.
You were 13.
And now I'm 31.
Then, for you, the next process is to go back.
I don't want to go back with empty hand, because back home, a lot of, you know, especially back, come from America. I've been out here for 18 years. They expect, you know, for me to come back with something. So my goal is, like, you know, to go to Alaska, because you make good money if you work for 3 months on a boat. So, you know, at least go there with like $10,000 to $15,000. So, you know, so I can give back, you know, and show them that, you know, oh, I came back with something. I just don't want to go back with empty-handed. Empty-handed. Yeah.
But you say you wanted to go back and at least travel, like go to Egypt.
Yeah. My main goal is like to go to Ethiopia first, and then you know help my you know family members that you know that I haven't spoke to or you know I forgot about you know. Because that was the only people I remember is like my uncles, you know. I don't remember all their kids, you know. They got families. I don't remember all, you know. To have that, you know, go revisit that, you know, and then meet my family members, and you know, help them, you know, give them something. That's what I want to do.
Have you talked to your family about this? Or like, what does your family think? Like, what are their thoughts on that?
My mom actually goes back. She went back, I think, 3 or 4 times to go visit the family. And my brother went to go visit. She took my brother with her. I think in 2014 or 2015. So she's been back a couple of times. I'm the only person that haven't went back. Cause the only reason why I haven't went back is because I haven't got my passport yet. So that's one of my main things. And I haven't saved enough money for me to say, oh, now I can go back, you know, and say, oh, that's my main goal. My mom actually wants to go back with me, you know, hopefully on the next trip that she takes. Actually, I want to get her the ticket, I want to take her out there with me, you know, pay for everything, and, you know, she doesn't have to worry about nothing.
I see. Well, thank you. Thank you, Abdul. Is there anything that we haven't covered that you would like to add or talk about?
You got any more questions for me? No,
not really. I mean, I could follow up some more, but I mean, if you had anything that you wanted to add, you know, that you think is important to people that, you know, might hear this or, mm-hmm. or listen to our, to your
story.
Story, yeah.
America is a beautiful place. No matter what skin or you know what race you are, we at the end of the day we're all one. We all came from one tree, and then we all going back to you know we all going back home. Our mission is just to find our way back home. Home is heaven, right? So that's our mission. That we all have one agenda, just to go to heaven. And that's what I believe. I believe that we all going to heaven. You know. I don't think hell exists, you know. So that's what I believe.